Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us this morning. We'll ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news, at which time we'll take them. You can ask your questions or comment on the air live by calling 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue, and as soon as we complete the thought that Braun, we'll put you on the air live. Just a brief announcement. It is political season. If you've noticed a few political signs around the area already, we have scheduled political interviews for all of our candidates here on KAJO Radio beginning April 24th, the 25th, and 26th. We'll give each candidate 10 minutes. We'll have four candidates a day during the same time frame from 9:30 to 10:30. 10 minutes each. Right here on KAJO Radio. Then on the 30th, we'll devote that whole hour to county code amendment. So that's what to look forward to here on KAJO Radio in terms of election coverage so far. And, of course, on Election Day, you can hear your vote count right here. In the meantime, let's get on with the business at hand. It is the second Tuesday of the month, and that means we welcome city staff in, led, of course, by City Manager Aaron Kubik. Aaron, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Glad to see you're feeling better.
Good morning.
Wait. Why can't I hear you?
How are we doing
there
now?
There you are.
Well, yeah. I did say good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Still a little hoarse there.
I am. Yeah, I'm still working through it. It's one of those silly things that have stuck around for a while.
Well, it happens here in Oregon in the springtime. So glad to have you here. What are we talking about today?
Well, as you've noticed, our weather is getting a little better. And we thought
week by week, you can't tell from one of them.
I know. Well, it's a little cloudy now, but I'm looking forward to the great sun that we're going to have this week. People are starting to get outdoors more, mm-hmm. and that means that they'll be utilizing some recreational access that they have in Grants Pass, including our parks. So brought Josh with us today so we could talk a little bit about parks and some of our cool parks projects that we've got. We have some wonderful things and additions coming to our park system that I think the public will be excited to hear about.
Oh, okay. Josh, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. What new things do we have coming into our parks here?
Thank you. So we've got several new things coming into our parks. One of the first things I wanted just to put out there, April is Arbor Month. With that, next Monday, we're going to be out at the Allen Creek Trail over by the backside of Garrison Fields down there planting a tree for Arbor Day. And with that, we normally reach out to the schools, and we have some students from Allendale Elementary School going to come over and help with that tree planting. The community is invited to that. And our urban forester, James Passley, does a great job of providing some trees for people to take home on like a first-come, first-served basis. So that's just like a really cool thing that we do every April this time of year to try to get kids involved and to promote our Tree City USA, which we've been for 36 years, and we just received our 12th growth award from the Tree City USA program.
Oh, all right. Well, congratulations are in order. Who do they go to, Josh? To City Manager Aaron Kubik? Are you going to take credit for that?
I am not going to take credit for that. It is truly a team effort with staff leading the way on making sure that we're complying with being a Tree City USA, but also the community members being involved in supporting this through our Tree Advisory Committee and other aspects. We've got a good group of volunteers and some great colleagues that make these things happen.
Okay. During your tree planting, when you're giving away trees, for some reason, my visual was putting a tree in the back of a truck and hauling it away. We're talking about seedlings, are we? What time?
Yeah,
what
we'll kind? Be giving away some trees and, you know,
do we do
smaller
know what
size.
Do we know what kind?
I believe we got some vine maples that we're planning to give away and then a few other kinds. It kind of depends. We're picking them up on Friday, so it depends on the nursery stock's availability.
Depends on what comes in.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. All right. So what else is going on in our parks now?
So one of the things we've been working on in partnership with the Rogue Valley Council of Governments is developing a new wetland trail at the Reinhardt Volunteer Parks right underneath where the pedestrian bridge is. With that, we've laid out a chip path that goes down along the wetland area there, and staff just installed the bridge last week to allow for better access. And then later on this month, we have the local Cub Scout Pack 29 coming down to help out spread some more chips along the area. And that's been a really good addition, and it helps keeping with that park's volunteer nature. And so we're pretty excited about that, to not only open up access for people to see this part of a wetland, but with the Rogue Valley Council of Governments, they're planning to continually use this area for their Stream Smart program and as like a living classroom for the local elementary schools around the area.
Okay, can we expand on that a little bit? You said installed a new bridge. This is not the pedestrian bridge, but bundled below the bridge. What does this bridge go to and from?
So below the pedestrian bridge area, towards the Rogue River side, we have a new chip path that you can see off of the main multimodal asphalt pathway there. And then we installed a footbridge from where the wetland kind of drains out into the river so that we can span that now instead of having people walk through the mud or anything else like that. And it's really just opened up this whole wetland area that kind of got consumed by blackberries.
Makes traveling it a little easier.
Much easier, absolutely.
Okay, and this is open to the public. How soon?
It's open right now. People have been using it. I was down there the other day, and some folks were down there bird watching into the wetlands and things like that. So it's pretty exciting for the community that wants to get out and kind of experience more the natural side of that park versus the developed side.
What can I see down there?
Down there, you've got a lot of different wetland species as far as, you know, there's plenty of frogs. We also installed a pollinator garden, so we're hoping for an influx of, like, butterfly and pollinator-type species. And then you have a lot of the bird species, acorn woodpeckers and things like that in the area.
Now, this is the first I've heard about it, and, of course, the parks are in the news a lot. How long has this project been underway?
We've been working on it since about last winter, and over the winter, we cut back the blackberries, cleared out the pathway, and we did some different volunteer events with the Rogue Valley Council of Governments to kind of get it established. And so we'll have it pretty much completely lined out. It's usable now. We've got chips down the majority of it, but after we get the next volunteer group in to lay down some more chips, we'll be able to really start marketing it.
Yeah, you said the Boy Scouts are coming in to help with that?
Yeah, that's the local Cub Scout group, PAC-29, which actually ended up adopting the road that RVP is, Webster Road, through the park. So we'll probably see them out there more picking up trash and things like that through the park system.
All right, Scouts, thank you. We appreciate you very much, very much. All right. I've already learned a lot about our park so far today. Is there more I need to know?
Absolutely. Right now, we'll stick with Reinhardt Volunteer Park. We are replacing the 30-year-old playground structure there. Work is already underway. We're expecting that to be done sometime towards the end of April, and then we'll have a grand opening with it, with the ribbon cutting, invite members of the public to come down for that. That is actually funded through our lodging tax and then an Oregon State Parks Land Water Conservation Fund. So one of the great things about the project is it didn't impact the general fund at all for this replacement playground. We were using outside revenue sources for the whole thing. And then the other thing that's just really an awesome part about this project is we ordered the playground through Playcraft, which is a local company based out of Merlin. Several times over the last few months, we've had people come up to us and explain, oh, they help manufacture part of this playground. So it really helps build up some variation of community connectivity, knowing that the parents and the grandparents that help manufacture this playground are going to be able to bring
pride in ownership.
Absolutely.
Pride in ownership. Great, great move. Now, this conversion right now, this construction is still going on right now, and with the great weather in our forecast right now, I'm sure the park's going to get some use right now. Are there some restrictions out there that people should be aware of before they go?
So right now, the main playground area is closed off. We have it fully fenced. We're getting ready to pour the second half of the playground's concrete pad for the rubber tile surfacing we're going to be using next Tuesday. That being said, the other side of the playground is still open, where we have some swings and a climber and things like that, as well as we have another playground area over by the pickleball courts and tennis courts location too. So the park's still completely open. This area is sectioned off already, though.
So just the one, actually, it's a fairly small area.
Yes.
All right. So by all means, take advantage of Reinhardt Volunteer Park with this great weather coming up. Look, Josh, we're already learning more about it, but let's continue. What else do I need to know about Grants Pass City Parks?
So one of the big things we just completed was installation of a new restroom at Baker Park. We installed a Portland loo. And then we demolish
these.
The
ones
restroom.
That are almost indestructible, supposedly.
Well, we're going to find out.
That's the challenge.
Yes, that is definitely the challenge. They are built to be more vandalism resistant and things like that. They've got, you know, more modern, sleek designs, as well as a lack of exposed infrastructure that can be ripped apart. And then they come with like a bunch of different types of graffiti coatings and things like that to help prevent that large scale vandalism. With that, we did demolish the old restroom, and we relocated this one up higher. the old restroom was actually in the floodway down there. So putting a new restroom in that location isn't really feasible by today's codes and standards. And getting it out of that floodway is going to help prevent it from getting damaged from future floods and things like that.
Oh, okay. Now, I did hear over the news, and I think that came out of Aaron's weekly report that we did some cleanup around in Riverside Park and the pavilions are there. And could you expand on that a little bit?
So every year around this time, staff do a whole big cleanup throughout our park system, not just Riverside, all around. What we end up finding out is people like, wow, everything looks great. And it's like, yes, we agree. It's because we're able to get out there and mow these areas because over the winter, you know, we're not able to get our mowers and things without getting them stuck in a bunch of places. But we have spent quite a bit of time at Riverside Park, not only pressure washing gazebos, we had the Trevilian Pavilion cleaned out, and then we had the shelter down at the where Boatnik has its thing. We got those sails cleaned off, which haven't been in about 5 years. And staff is still working on a couple of things. We're getting ready to reseal concrete and things like that. Part of it's in preparation because we know Boatnik's coming up and we want to make the park presentable. Part of it's just our yearly spring cleaning like anyone else has when it comes to getting into our lawn areas and making sure that they're all freshened up.
All right. Mentioned Boatnik. That's coming up, certainly. In fact, we're already in our planning stages here at the radio station for Boatnik. What do you have to go through in order to get ready for Boatnik?
So on the city park side, we tend to basically get all the restrooms, everything like that, in order for Boatnik. And then we get the grounds and everything to the standards that they would like them. And we hand over the keys to the park, essentially, the week of Boatnik so that, you know, they then take over. And then our staff that normally work at Riverside Park help respond to issues at the park. And then they go switch and work at the Caveman Pool to get that up and going for the pool season. So on the city side, we do a lot of planning with the active club prior to Boatnik. We've had several meetings already this year, making sure everything's in place. And then it's not just with Riverside Park. It's also for the downtown parade that goes along there and making sure that, you know, everyone's got all their ducks in a row for that type of thing.
All right. I didn't realize that parks would be involved in planning for the parade also. Or just
I do because I'm also in downtown maintenance is under the Parks Department now as well.
Ah, all right. Okay. So we're going to be all set for Boatnik here.
Parade, absolutely.
Parade and all. All right. Right in the Riverside Park. All that's good news. And you mentioned the pool. What kind of shape is the pool in right now? Is this the last summer for the pool?
I don't know. That's been kind
it's
of an
still
ongoing,
up in the air politically, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's kind of been an ongoing question from a maintenance standpoint for several years. You know, back in like 2019, we had a pool survey come out, the Anderson Pool Report, which showed a lot of deficiencies at our pool system, which really started the conversation of replacing the pool. And this year right now, we're not really going to know one way or the other until we start filling the pool up. One of the issues we have with the pool is we do have substantial leaks in the pool. Essentially, it's a 202,000-gallon vessel that we are refreshing once a week. So we've got about 30,000 gallons of water leaking out of the pool a day. Now, with that, it's not an issue of us not being able to put water back into the pool. It creates an issue of keeping chemical balance in the pool to where they need to be for OHA standards. Last season, there were several days that we had to tweak our chemical applications numerous times to be able to keep up with the amount of refresh rate we were getting. And so we really won't know until we get the pool filled and start refreshing it. We have done a lot of repairs as far as sealing cracks and things like that over the winter, and then we'll do some more here as we're doing the prep for it. But once we get it going, you know, last year there were several days the Y either had to start late or close early because we couldn't keep the chemicals into the pool itself.
All right. Do we have any idea where that water is going?
Not at the moment. We are planning to have a company come out and do a ground penetrating LIDAR around the pool itself to make sure we don't have any large voids or anything like that for safety reasons here in the next week.
What about the chemicals that are leaching in with the pool water? Do we have any idea what kind of effect those would have on the area?
We do not. Essentially, you know, my hope would be they'd kind of get filtered out like most things do through the general way groundwater works and things like that. But we just really don't know at this point.
Okay. So you mentioned that you've been filling some cracks in the pool. Is that going to reduce the loss of water through the leakage?
That's our hope, is basically if we're able to get the seams sealed up again. We do it almost every year at this point. It's going to decrease the amount of water we're losing, so it allows us to keep the chemicals in the water to a, you know, acceptable level based off of the OHA standards.
All right. Once the pool is up and filled, then we turn it over to the YMCA to run. Is that the way it still works this year?
Yeah, we've got, you know, a long-standing partnership with the YMCA. We're working on finalizing this year's agreement with them. It's a standard thing we do every single year with them, and they take it over and they start the pool up by the third Monday of June, which I believe would be June 17th this year, and run it for about 70 days, assuming there's no cataclysmic like wildfire scenario where we're having to close it because of smoke, which we've definitely been experiencing the last few years, or any other issues like that.
All right. Josh, I'm learning more about the parks than I ever thought I would hear in a very, very quick 10, 15 minutes here, but we got to take a little break. We'll be right back after this important message. Welcome back, everyone. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. We're talking city parks so far today. We've got City Manager Aaron Kubik and Parks Director Josh is with us. Josh, let's continue there. So the pool is anticipated to be ready by the third week in June, we hope, right?
Yes, yeah. All indications are, you know, we're going to go through our standard process of starting it up, and, you know, we'll make sure that basically, we're going to give as much effort as we can to make sure it's open running for the community this year.
Yeah. When you say parks to me, you know, I'm thinking Riverside Park, I'm thinking Ogle Park, I'm thinking Reinhardt Volunteer Park, but it's evidently a lot more than just those few parks that we see on a daily basis.
Yeah. So, you know, we do have lots of parks in our system. We've got about 20 developed parks throughout our system. And then, you know, we do have staff dedicated to managing each one of those parks in some form or another. Some of our northern parks, we have 1 to 2 staff members that go through those parks every single day. Every morning we start off with park checks to where they go check restrooms, trash, receptacles, and just make sure the conditions of the parks. And then they break off to do their typical park maintenance duties of the mowing and the blowing and everything like that.
Well, I have to ask, since we are doing this on a daily basis and checking on everything is okay, let's talk about the homeless in the parks for just a second here. Has that increased the workload significantly for your staff?
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things. It's definitely increased it significantly. What used to be a park check could take 30 minutes of the morning to an hour of the morning. Sometimes you end up at one park for 2 hours just cleaning up the area or having to go back to a park multiple times throughout the day because our community members are calling in and reporting some issues that have came up since we were last there. It's one of those things I always tell people that when they call me about this stuff, that our parks are only as clean as their last user, kind of like everything else. Mm-hmm. And with that, you know, our staff are constantly going back to, you know, take care of an issue that they found in a restroom. And it's not just our staff. We have a lot of contracted vendors, too, like Aspire, who go out and help clean our restrooms and pull trash through our parks. And they, too, are kind of experiencing that increase in workload.
How is your staff handling it?
It's not the best. It's one of those things, you know, the entire nature of parks and recreation as a profession has changed so drastically since Martin versus Boise back in 2018. And then, you know, with our current legal case going on right now, it's even changed it more for this specific system. But every park system I've worked for over the last few years has been dealing with similar issues. It's just different communities have different standards on how we'd like to handle these types of issues when they're coming up. But it's definitely been a situation where, you know, our staff, they're definitely burnt out about it. We've got staff members that are really worn down. They knew what it was like before these parks had these issues at such a high level because, you know, one of the big myths out there, 2018 isn't when homeless people first came to our parks. Our parks have always had homeless people in them to some form or another. It's just the amount of them now is a lot more. And so a lot of staff remember what it was like beforehand, and they were able to do a lot more of their mowing and, like, the daily maintenance and the landscaping that they all loved. And now, you know, it definitely has became a drain when they're out there cleaning up the same area every single day or repairing the same broken fixture in a bathroom multiple times in a week. These are things that we're just constantly dealing with. And personally, I'm just grateful every day when our staff come back to work every single day because we've been doing really well. And, you know, they've been sticking it out because they truly are committed to not just this community, but providing these parks and recreation areas to as safe and as clean for the user groups, you know.
Certainly a tip of the hat and kudos to that staff. I'm under the impression that things have really have improved at least marginally since the implementation of new time, place, and manner rules in the parks. You want to comment on that, or Aaron, you want to weigh in?
We've seen definitely more opportunities for the public to utilize the parks in every way possible, whether it be resting in the parks to recreating in the parks. And the policy decisions that council implemented with regards to time, place, and manner regulations, I think, have had a positive impact on our park system.
Well, we all know the news that there are probably three main, or maybe four main areas that you really have to deal with. And that's, of course, Riverside, Tussing, Morrison, and probably Gilbert Creek Park. What about the rest of the parks?
So with the nature of our unhoused in the city of Grants Pass, when they get posted and they move to another location, you know, every week we come back and find a new area that could be popped up with tents. We get a lot of vocalization about Morrison, mainly due to the Little League activities that happen there. We get a lot of vocalization about Tussing because we have some neighbors in the area that are very active and want to make sure that it's staying on council and everyone's radar. When it comes to Riverside, it's more of a Riverside west side of the park situation with the new rules that council enacted in time, place, manner for the east side of Riverside Park. That has been working out really well to keep tents out of that area. And then other places.
Just visually, it seems to have made a difference.
Yeah, visually. But, you know, we also get a lot of complaints and people with a lot of concerns about Fruitdale. It's right next to the elementary school. Any day of the week, there may be 10-plus tents at Fruitdale Park, and it's a pretty small park area where they're allowed to camp, and it's right next to that Three Rivers Elementary School right there. Gilbert Creek's another one that we get a lot of vocalization about due to its close proximity to the schools. But, you know, no parks are kind of safe at this point when it comes to tents being in them outside of Reinhardt and the east side of Riverside Park. Lawn Ridge is one that has definitely experienced a large increase in camping, same with West Home Park as well. And then, you know, every day at Kesterson Park, which is right on A Street there, you can see numerous tents there. What we tend to find is that the homeless individuals, depending on which park they're going to, they're choosing to go to a specific park because it's kind of got a different feel of the rest of the campers that are there. You know, you may end up with some people choosing to stay at Kesterson, and they normally keep their sites a little bit cleaner and everything like that because they don't want to be associated with the people that are out there spreading, like, rubbish and things like that all around their park system.
So there's a social strata among the homeless.
Absolutely, and we walk through that strata every day in the Parks Department.
Interesting. All right. Well, certainly, once again, kudos to your staff there and to you for doing yeoman work out there. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back right after news coming up at the top of the hour.
If you're looking...
Welcome back to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Just a brief announcement here. Once again, with the political season abound, we have invited 12 candidates who are being challenged in this May election to appear here on this radio station. Those interviews will take place the 24th, 25th, and 26th of this month. Each candidate will be given 10 minutes. We'll have due 4 a day from the 24th through the 26th. That will take care of all 12. On the 30th, we'll devote a full hour to the Josephine County Code Amendment that will change the structure, that could change the structure of county government here in Josephine County. So those are some things to jot down on your calendar and look forward to, and we hope that you'll tune into. In the meantime, today we're talking with the with the City of Grants Pass Parks Department. City Manager Aaron Kubik is with us also. So the number to call is 541-472-1270. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue, and as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. There you go. All right. Welcome back, Aaron, Josh. Josh, we've been talking about lots of things with the Grants Pass City Parks Department. That includes one of the new developments, and that's Dollar Mountain. And what's the progress there? Are we making progress there? What's the status? What are we looking forward out there?
So we're making progress on Dollar Mountain. We just completed the permitting process through the county's development permit for it. So we're getting ready to put out an RFP towards the end of this month, beginning of May. To be able to go out for a bid to get a licensed contractor to come in and help develop this. As of right now, this has been a large project in partnership with Travel Oregon. The National Park Service has worked on it for the conceptual plan as well as leading the way to kind of get us lined out in the early part of this project. We've been working in partnership with BLM for potential of future management of the BLM properties, as well as potential funding. And they also helped bring in Title II funding for the Crescent parking lot that was developed. And then the Oregon Parks and Recreation Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, we just received a $350,000 grant from the local government grant program to help fund building the trail system. And we've been working with a trail design firm, C2 Recreation, throughout this entire project. And we've got it all mapped out, flagged out, and ready to go. And then the other big partner we've been dealing with and working with is with the Rogue Valley Mountain Bike Association, who has not only been a big supporter of this project, they've actually committed to provide up to 300 hours of volunteer labor to help keep this trail maintained throughout the life of it, which is great. Right now, we are looking at developing approximately 12 miles of hiking and mountain biking trail system up at Dollar Mountain. Part of the trail design is to incorporate routes that are for biking only, hiking only, and then some of the more black diamond level, higher in mountain biking opportunities for people that are looking for that advanced route. And then another side of it, knowing that we weren't going to make this mountain ADA compliant because of just the typography and the general terrain being unable for people to have the slopes for ADA and ABA for these types of outdoor recreational facilities, we switched over and adapted our design and our plan to include trail widths that are going to allow for the adaptive mountain bike community to go out there. So even people with mobility issues will still be able to use this with their adaptive mountain bikes that they make now. And these are those three-wheeled mountain bikes and things like that, and the trike styles that are really popular.
What kind of adjustments did you have to make in order to, and that's the first time I heard that term, is the adaptive trail bikes. Can you explain that in a little more detail? How wide do the paths have to be? What kind of surface do you have to put down?
So in general, we're looking at using the natural surface. It's basically DG, decomposed granite, when we get up there and start working in it. And for the mountain bike, for the adapted widths, it's really a wider the better situation. We're looking at having like a construction width of up to 42 inches with a target average of about 36 inches in width, which will allow for a lot of those three-wheeled style adaptive mountain bikes to get up and use it. And then the other side of the adaptive mountain biking is keeping in mind with slopes and things like that. So in general, we're probably looking at about an average of 7% slope throughout the entire system. But anywhere that we can, we're going to be taking the slopes down to, you know, keep it below that 7 to 5% range. And then we're also going to have pullouts and things like that. One of the big things that I've heard from the adaptive mountain biking community is a lot of times they'll start on a trail and it's rated as an adaptive mountain biking one, which is no support needed. They get a mile in and it quickly jumps up to like a three, which is support needed, but they don't have any spot to turn around their adaptive mountain bikes. And so it creates situations where they kind of get stuck in place. So, you know, part of it is when we have our trail intersections and we're changing from a one to a two to a three, we're going to be incorporating enough turnaround lanes to allow for people to come back out of those areas.
Right. Dollar Mountain sounds like a great asset for the Grants Pass community, and I know initially it was talked about as being able to even draw in additional tourists for their hiking trails or the mountain biking trails, or now the adaptive mountain biking trails. Are there other areas of the park that can be utilized for other areas, or are those the primary three?
Those are going to be the primary three, is going to be the, you know, hiking and mountain biking in general. With that, you know, we are also going to allow for e-bikes, which is something a little bit new for people, and we're going to allow up to class one e-bikes usage on Dollar Mountain. Part of it, again, is for that adaptive group, as well as for anyone that wants to go mountain biking but needs a little bit of assistance. The Class 1 e-bikes don't have throttles or anything like that. And then our partnership with Travel Oregon and Travel Southern Oregon, Visit Grants Pass, and all those types of tourism subsidiary-type companies, they're really looking to market and push this out. Mountain biking in general is a billion-dollar industry for the tourism side of things, and it is just growing in popularity. One of the big things that came out of COVID was people were pushed out into the outdoors, and it created all new users for these types of things, which on the nice side of social distancing from a parks and recreation standpoint, we love that the parks became like the safe haven for people to go and get really enthused into other outdoor recreational activities that they otherwise wouldn't have been engaged in.
I keep thinking about all of the trails that we're going to put in. How much acreage do we have in Dollar Mountain? How big is it?
So it's about 442 acres total for the city side. With that, the city side has flagged out about – it's around 12 miles of trails. I think it's 11.7 of trails. And then it also connects into like an additional 1,500 acres of public land in general between Josephine County and BLM. And the city's been working with BLM. We also had our flagging consultant, Travel Oregon, paid to fund them to go out and flag the BLM section too. So we have those routes already made up and ready to go. And we're talking with BLM to go through the NEPA process and like an MOU style process that, you know, will be taken to council at some point down the line to make that decision on how we'd like to proceed to be able to incorporate about an additional 13 miles of trails onto the BLM portion. So as a whole, the grand, like, entire picture of what we're looking to do over the next few years has come up with about 26 miles worth of mountain biking trails. On the city side, we have a lot of shorter loopbacks and things like that since we're closer to a population center. So it's really designed so that if somebody has like an hour to go mountain biking or hiking, they have a loop they can take. If someone wants to spend more time up there, they have other loops they can take. And then for the BLM side, it'll be really designed more for people that want to have like a full day's mountain biking experience to be able to go out and do that whole thing.
How is the communication with BLM going right this time? Is everything looking positive right now?
Yeah, everything's looking really great. Our BLM staff locally are really engaged in this project. They believe it's going to be great. We've been working with their field rangers as well as their newer outdoor manager that they just got on full time, which is a big asset to this whole community to have somebody here full time for that type of position.
All right. What about the county portion of that?
For the county portion, you know, we haven't had much discussions with them since the original discussions. There is that section of county land where the current trail is, but our project is routing around those areas. So the hope is that, you know, once we get our trail developed, we can reengage the county and come up with some sort of user agreement, active use travel type thing, or potentially purchase that little section of property as well.
All right. Two questions. First question is, how soon will the Grants Pass portion be ready for full use?
So we're hopeful to get it done by the end of this fiscal year, or
really?
End of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, we're going to put the RFP out in the next month or so, and then, you know, we'll hopefully have it built out before the end of December. If not, it may take into the beginning of next spring. It kind of depends on a couple of things, whether it's weather, fire season, things like that that come into play at that point.
Second portion of that question, how soon or how long will it take to incorporate the BLM portion of that land into the city?
So part of that is a council decision. We need to have those conversations with council. And then the NEPA process alone for BLM to get that approval can be quite long, up to 18 months.
Yeah, government gears grind slowly.
Yeah.
Well, shucks. At any rate, fascinating. Any other areas that we need to be aware of that the parks are going on? That Dollar Mountain sounds exciting, certainly when it comes close to fruition end of this year. So.
Absolutely. One of the other repairs we have going on right now is at the Grants Pass Skate Park. We just went out for a bid to get repairs done there. Over the last few years, we've had a lot of cracking and lips that have kind of uplifted beyond our safety standards. So here in the next week or so, I believe on the 17th, council's reviewing the contract to award the bid to a contractor to come out and repair a bunch of the stuff at the skate park, which is really great. One of the things with our skate park is this is kind of set to be about a 5 to 7 year fix, with the idea that over the next 5 to 7 years, we'll come up with some sort of plan for either doing a repour of the skate park or potentially rebuilding an entirely new skate park because it's reached that end of life.
I was really aware of the skate park once it went in and got a lot of use. How much use has it had since then? Because I'm just out of that loop. Is it used a lot?
It gets used heavily. It's probably like per size-wise one of our most heavily used
really? Okay.
things. Anytime you drive by it, it's packed with people. And I think a lot of people think it's just kids, but there's plenty of older skaters out there too that go out in the middle of the mornings and things like that to skate as well. It's heavily used by the community.
All right. How long will the repairs take, and will that close the park?
It will close the skate park for during the time of the repairs, but, you know, we're hoping to have it all up and going by the beginning of the summer, you know, trying to get it done while school's still in session so we can get it up and going.
Less pressure before the summer hits.
Absolutely.
Right? Well, I certainly understand that. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We're talking city parks. We've got city manager and parks director right here on KAJO. Stay tuned. We've got more for you. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We're talking parks today. Josh, let's talk a little bit about Riverside Park, and I know that there has been talk about putting a stage back in there, pretty significant investment, sort of a structure. Where does that plan stand right now?
So currently right now, we are still planning to install a new permanent stage at Riverside Park. The stage itself will have like a collapsible band shell that can be taken down during the off season. Similarly, what you see at the City of Brookings Azalea Park or over in Roseburg, they have a similar setup too. Right now, we're going through the final parts of our engineering and design phase with that and structural engineering. The stage itself is being built in a floodplain, so we have to go through a little bit more for that design than a standard stage built outside of that. With that, we did order the power, and so we're going to be upgrading the power to a three-phase 400-amp system, and that was about 12 months out when we ordered it about 6 months ago. We have been in talks with the chamber. I spoke with one of their representatives just last week about the potential of bringing concerts in the park back to Riverside Park. And, you know, all indications are that they are definitely interested in that option. One of the main reasons the chamber left Riverside Park was because with that portable stage that they had been using, they would have to take it out every single time and then bring it, open it up, and it was just a lot of work for not only their volunteers, but they also felt it was a little bit unsafe having to do it so frequently because it's not some modern stage with hydraulics or anything like that, and these are pretty heavy stage panels to be laid down and everything. So it was a big commitment in not only their volunteer time, but potential safety. And that was a large
reason. Just wear and tear from constant use.
Absolutely. And that was one of the reasons why they opted to go somewhere else, because at the fairgrounds, they're able just to leave it up for the season, which makes it a lot easier for them. And then some of their other concerns were regards of the power situation at the park itself, not being able to have enough power for larger acts and things like that. And so we're upgrading all that with the intention that the chamber will be able to come back.
Location in the park for that?
It's down off of Vista Drive, kind of towards the tree where the old play field is, kind of where the old lawn bowling area used to be. That's where it's going to be.
All right. So a little bit different location, but heavier electrical and certainly a solid foundation. We're talking a concrete foundation to put down there.
Yeah, it'll be basically a concrete stage built up type of a thing. And then part of the reason that location was chose is for the amplified sound. Once we have the band shell up, it'll kind of shoot the sound down the river towards town and the highway to help disperse it amongst the community and folks that live along.
So that'll
the river.
Keep it away from the residential areas.
Yeah, that was a large part of the reason we decided on that location.
All right, and so we're talking about completion of that, depending on approval of the City Council on all of those situations later this year, by next year.
That's our hope, is that, you know, we
next
can
summer
start
we can be
construction
back in there?
Towards the beginning of, towards, you know, late this fall. And then once we do the construction, we can have the power and everything. We're still waiting on the power, so we're going to plan on building everything up as soon as we can and have all the infrastructure in place if the power ends up being 18 months out or something. There's a big delay when it comes to ordering new components and everything like that for transformers for power right now.
We understand that here at the radio station. We have a new transmitter was shipped yesterday.
But all intentions are by next concert in the park season, we'll have the stage up and going.
All right. Well, we'll cross our fingers and keep an eye on that. What else should we be aware of, Josh? We just were learning all kinds of things about out parks that really have been falling by the wayside through some
We've just got all sorts of things going on right now. I mean, this is kind of peak season for youth baseball and softball. And then we've got, you know, the adult softball and baseball starting up here in the next few weeks as well. Our reservation season's kind of starting to pop off. We do have many park shelters that are reservable across our system. We use a rec desk software, and our recreation programmer coordinator has been extremely busy working with the recreational user groups to make sure everyone's getting their field times that they need while still having fairness. We really have to balance a lot of competing and conflicting priorities amongst each of these user groups to make sure that we are maximizing our field use and keeping with the idea that we are heavily youth-focused when it comes to that field use.
If I'm looking to make a reservation, say, for a family reunion that could be of significant size, where do I go? Who do I call?
So if you go to our city website under the recreation, under Parks and Recreation section, you can go to the rec desk software, or you can call Julia Wright. She's our recreation coordinator, and she gets called by community members all the time about these types of things. Her contact information's on the city webpage under Parks and Recreation, too, and she can get you lined out.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Gully, have we left anything out about parks?
All sorts of things.
Okay. We only have about 10 minutes left, so what do
you're
you
good
have?
To go. No, it's just one of those things. One thing that, you know, our community needs to be aware of is in the next few years, we don't have a lot of locations left for adding new amenities. Like, you know, one of our community groups really wants a parkour course, which is like an obstacle course for people to go run, jump, and things like that. But we're running out of space in our current park system. So we need to start looking at, you know, developing some of our parkland reserves like Beacon Hill or the Hamilton Overland Park Reserve off of Hamilton and things like that. So we can start accommodating these other recreational users that have kind of gained in popularity over the years. And the other thing that, you know, just something that community needs to keep in mind is most of our park infrastructure has about a 20 to 50 year life cycle. And, you know, three of our parks, Redwood, Morrison, Fruitdale, those were built in the 2000s. RVP was built in the 90s, early 90s. The rest, 80s or below. So we are hitting an issue where it comes to some of our park features and needing to start making some improvements on deferred maintenance and replacing things like restrooms that otherwise would go unnoticed but aren't the current like ADA standards and things like that.
I understand that there's a formula for saying how much parkland you need for a city of this size. Are we at the right level for parks, or do we need more?
We are not. I forget the numbers off the top of my head, but we did just update the Parks Master Plan. Our Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee went through that big update, and the numbers got updated. And for a city our size, we are not only below the number of park acres that, like, the National Parks Association sets out as a standard, we're also below the amount of park maintenance full-time workers as well.
Okay. Well, always room to grow.
Absolutely.
Room to grow. All right. Josh, I want to thank you very much. I'm down to about our last 3 minutes here. And Mr. Kubik, you've just been kind of sitting over there awfully quiet here.
Josh has been doing a great job expressing all the great things that are happening in our park system.
All right. Well, I'm assuming that he's got all the support from city staff that he needs.
Well, we can always use more.
All right. Do they need any volunteers at parks?
You know, there's a few opportunities here and there where some church groups or whatever will come in and they'll do a special project and try to work with us. And we do have a great summer program where we hire youth within the community to help us with when the parks are being utilized, even at a bigger use than in the wintertime. And so we've got that fairly well. But if people are interested in volunteer efforts, they could always give the city a call at 450-6000, and we could talk to them about that.
All right, we're coming down to the wire here, and I have to – I've got the city manager here. I have to ask this one question about law enforcement funding here for the city of Grants Pass. And there's some real questions that have come up here recently that have really changed the direction, and a roundtable discussion has been scheduled or is being scheduled. Do we know the dates and times and who's going to be involved yet?
Yeah, we're gathering that information now. I've asked the city council to provide us with contact information on who they would like to have sitting at the roundtable. It's going to be, a very inclusive group that will have special interests in public safety. And we're going to sit down at the roundtable and have a discussion about the need. What kind of services are we providing right now? The need for those services. Do we need additional FTE and the reasons why? And then maybe do just a broad brush of funding opportunities that we've discussed. It's more of, based on what council's discussion was, the forum is more of a let's have an opportunity to sort of express where we are and have an opportunity for those individuals to ask some additional questions that may not have been answered before in the past when it comes to public safety funding.
All right. We don't have hard dates yet.
We're still working on those dates, but it is going to be in April, so it'll be this month.
And so relatively soon.
Yes, and it'll be open to the public also, so we'll be providing a press release on that, and the public can come and observe the roundtable discussion.
So the public won't be involved. They'll just be able to observe the stakeholders who are sitting at the table.
Yeah, it's going to be a public meeting, and it's specifically tailored towards the special interests in individuals that are going to be invited to the roundtable to go into detail about what their concerns are with public safety, The public will have an opportunity to observe that, that round table. And then also the public always has an opportunity to express their opinions either through email to Mayor Council and to staff and or at our business meetings during public comment.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Josh, tip of the hat. Keep those parks clean and nice for us. We really appreciate your efforts. And Aaron, always glad to see you have here. And best of health to you so far.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show on KAJO.
It's no longer a